We're going to Acts chapter 17 this morning to continue the series, Navigating in a Post-Christian Culture. And we're discussing this morning the idea of practicing God's presence. Scott Sports is a major supplier of football helmets for the National Football League as well as for college. But on their helmets nowadays, they issue a warning label. And this is what the warning label says in part. Warning: no helmet system can prevent concussions or eliminate the risk of serious head or neck injuries while playing football. And then it describes a bunch of other things, bad things that happen to you because of football and head injuries. But the last line of the warning label is highlighted, and it says this: to avoid these risks, do not engage in the sport of football. So I guess at least the manufacturer is honest about the risk of playing football as well as the potential failure of their product. The main reason, though, why they had to put that label on the helmets is because of so many lawsuits from former NFL players against Riddell, the manufacturer of those helmets, that they had to put these warning labels on them just to protect themselves. Strange warning labels that have to go on products, isn't it? You know, and some of them are so ridiculous. You know, hair dryers do not use in the bathtub or things like that. You know, but you know, somebody did that, and that's why they had to put the label on there. But, you know, in a very similar way, the Bible is honest with us about the risks of following Jesus. The Bible talks about, Jesus talked about those risks. The world hated me, they'll hate you. Those who choose to follow me must take up their cross and follow me. The Apostle Paul talked about suffering persecution for the sake of Christ. So the Bible is very honest about that. So I guess in some sense the Bible could really have a warning label put on it too. You know, to avoid the risk of following Jesus, do not engage in following Jesus. But God doesn't have to say that. God is honest with us about everything. And he also gives us some amazing promises in his word and the rewards that come with being a disciple of Jesus Christ. The Apostle Paul said in Romans chapter 8, verse 18, "For I consider that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory that is to be revealed in us." So he could look ahead and know that this is all temporary and there is something much better that is coming. And Jesus also gave a promise of his unceasing presence with us. When he issued that final command to his disciples, that which we call the Great Commission, which is a commission given to us as well, but those last words that he said was, "I will always be with you, even to the end of the age." So as we go about doing his work and his will, we have the assurance that he's not going to leave us out there on our own. "I will always be with you all the way to the very end." Another promise from God that's quoted in Hebrews chapter 13, verse 5. God said, "I will never desert you, nor will I forsake you." So those are wonderful promises for us concerning the abiding presence of God. But when you think about it, there are so many things in life that vie for our attention. I mean, the world has changed so dramatically ever since long ago in the Old Testament through the psalmist, when God issued what we could call really a command when he said, "Be still and know that I am God." Cease striving. Just, you know, quit flailing your arms. Quit struggling with it all. Just be quiet. Relax and know that I am God. But yet, you think of how difficult that can be sometimes, just to be still and know that. information technology advances almost by the month, so it seems, the technology you have today is outdated tomorrow. But we have so much advances now. We can communicate with each other at lightning speed, no matter where we are, no matter where we choose to be. There's going to be a cell phone tower somewhere. And now they make them so they look like trees, don't they? Some tree, you know, five stories higher than the tree line, but that's a cell tower. But we can communicate with each other in remote places. We're never disconnected. Now, that's not all bad. Sometimes it's really quite convenient to be able to have that connectivity. When Beth and I are shopping and we're in a large store or shopping mall, we get separated. Well, we just text each other. Where are you at? You know, I'm in hardware, or I'm in kitchen supplies. I'm in men's department. I'm in the jewelry department. You guess which one of us would be in each of those places. And when she says I'm in jewelry department, I say, I make a beeline to get over there. I think it's time to go. We gotta hurry. You know? But, you know, parents can keep in contact with their kids better than, you know, we could. I often wish, looking back on it, that our girls had cell phones when they were driving as teenagers, so if a car broke down or had a problem, they could get a hold of us. I remember one time when our daughter Jennifer had an accident, and she had to walk in the pouring rain to the chicken coop restaurant to find a phone and call home to let us know where she was and what had happened. It'd been a whole lot easier if she could have just sat there in the car and called us. But, of course, there are other challenges that come with your teenager having a cell phone, too. So those of you who are parents know that you have to work a little harder at putting restrictions on things. And kids will text to each other when they're sitting next to each other. Some of you are probably doing it right now. Stop it. We can call 911 so much more quickly and easier than we used to. Earlier this summer, we were on our way here to church for Sunday night service, and we got in a fender bender with a semi-truck, and he didn't stop. And anyway, by the time I had the opportunity to call the police to report the accident, the dispatcher told me they already had five calls on that thing already. She knew the description of my vehicle and where the accident happened and all about it before I even called her. So, you know, it's nice people are friendly, and we'll make the call for you. But, you know, at the same time, the technology can be a problem, too, because you know very well how these things can complicate our lives as well. I mean, there is an assortment of smartphones and other electronic devices that take control of our eyes, our ears, our fingers, our minds. And we can stick a little screen in front of our face and totally disengage from the people around us. You can have a conversation with somebody while you're answering a text from somebody else. I know, because I've done it. But it's not good. Now, what's my point in sharing all of this? Well, my point is simply this. It's one thing to perceive God's presence, which is what we talked about last week. To know that He is always near, always present, always with you. But it's quite another thing to practice His presence. One thing to be attentive to it and have the knowledge of it, another thing to actually live like it, to put into practice His presence. I can know the fact that God is with me, but I may not always live like He is present with me. I may know that a football helmet will not totally prevent a concussion, but I might get out there and play like I think it does. Well, not me personally, but, you know, I use myself in the illustration. Or I may know that a cop always sits just over the hill on the highway at the same location with his radar gun. I know that. But I can be distracted and so absorbed in the music on my radio or my mind is somewhere else that I forget, and I end up with a speeding ticket. I almost ran a red light on the way to church this morning on the overpass up here on Oakland Drive because my mind was thinking about something else. I was thinking about a weird dream I had last night. I was trying to piece it all together as I'm driving, and all of a sudden, Beth Hall, she just kind of said, "Stephen!" That's what she says when she's after me about something. I'm not honey or Steve. I'm Stephen! Sorry. But she did save my life this morning. And just by that word, I woke up and saw, oh, the light was already yellow. And, I mean, I was quite a ways back and it was yellow. And she knew that he's not stopping. Now, she's used to me gunning it once in a while, but this was not, I was not accelerating. But my mind was just disengaged. If she hadn't been with me, I'd have blown the red light. Now, I'm talking about practicing God's presence because it's so easy to not practice it. To be so involved or engaged mentally or physically in other things that occupy us. Now, as we go to our text here in Acts chapter 17, we're talking about practicing God's presence. And in Acts chapter 17, Paul is in Greece. That's the country, not the substance. He was not a mechanic. And he goes to the city of Athens to a building called the Areopagus, which was kind of like the Supreme Court building of the city. And in this Areopagus building was a monument. And the monument had an inscription that said, "To an unknown God." To an unknown God. Now, we should know that in those days in Greece, they had a god for everything. They worshipped a whole bunch of gods. Every god had a name, and every god had something they were in charge of or responsible for. And you had to do certain things to appease this god and that god if you wanted this or that, whatever that god was in charge of. But there was one god that was a mystery to them. Now, based upon what Paul is going to say, it must have been a god they knew to be responsible for the creation of the world and the creation of mankind. The only problem is they didn't know who that god was. They didn't have a name for him. They couldn't quite figure that god out. They knew he was there. They knew somebody was responsible, but for some reason in all of their history and mythology, they didn't have a god. Or didn't know this particular god. So they just erected the monument that said, "This is to an unknown god." And maybe just in case we missed one along the line, this will be the one. Well, Paul uses that monument as a segue, a starting point, so that he could share the gospel with them. He says at the end of verse 23, "Therefore, what you worship in ignorance, this I proclaim to you." In other words, he's saying, this is an unknown god to you, but I'm here to tell you that I know this god, and I want to tell you a little bit about him. So Paul explains some facts about this unknown god who is actually Jehovah, Yahweh, the Almighty God. For one thing, he says that this god cannot be contained. He can't be contained, verse 24. Now let me read what he says here. Verse 24, "Therefore," correction, "the God who made the world and all things in it, since he is Lord of heaven and earth, does not dwell in temples made with hands." I'll keep reading here. "Nor is he served by human hands as though he needed anything, since he himself gives to all people life and breath and all things. And he made from one man every nation of mankind to live on all the face of the earth, having determined their appointed times and boundaries of their habitation, that they would seek God, if perhaps they might even grope for him and find him, though he is not far from each of us. For in him we live and move and exist. As even some of your own poets have said, for we also are his children. So, several things that God said, Paul says there about God. One is, he can't be contained. You don't have to go to a building to find this God. You don't have to erect a structure in order to have him fill that place, and then you go there and that's where you meet him. No, not like that at all. He is present everywhere. The second thing Paul says in verse 25 was that you don't have to do things for this God to make him like you or to do good things for you. You don't have to give him things in order to get his attention, to get him to respond to you like you do your other gods, really. Because as Paul says in verse 25, he's the one who actually gives. He gives life. He gives breath to every living being. So he's not the God who's the taker. He's the God who is the giver. And third, he's the God who created all mankind and he rules over all people. Verse 26, Paul said that he created all of us through one man. We know that one man he's talking about is Adam. And not only did he create us, but he determined when and where we would live. He determined the nations. He determined the boundaries, the geographical layout of this globe. It didn't all just happen by chance. Now, I know, sure, there were wars and there were battles and there were politics involved, but God's sovereign over all of that stuff. He's determined what the nations would be and what those boundaries will be and how they're going to change. And there's some big changes coming one of these days. He even determined that the United States of America would be in existence. But you could take that concept and make it even more personal and realize that for you and I personally, maybe you don't think about this very often, but God determined when and where you and I would be born and where we would live. I think I can say that truthfully based upon what Jeremiah the prophet said and also on what the psalmist in Psalm 139 had to say. How God knew us before we were even conceived in our mother's womb, before we were even a thought. He already knew us. He already had our life charted out. So every move you've made, God has been in it. Now, God must have known that I'm not one to move around a lot, that I couldn't handle that. So he let me live the first 34 years of my life in Fremont, Michigan, and then the past 27 years in Kalamazoo. Now, I hope he's not going to move me around anymore because I don't want to move. I just want to, if I do move, I'm just selling everything in the house with it. Everything stays. I'll just go. But God knew you were going to be here. So you're here by God's appointment in this town, and you're here in this pew by God's appointment. And you can't leave until he says you can leave. You write that down? Well, another thing that Paul says is about this God is he's closer than you think. Those who seek him will find him, verse 27. And you don't have to look very far, he says, because he's a whole lot closer than you think he is. You just have to seek him. And if you seek him, you'll find him. And then finally, in verse 5, Paul says, in him we live and move and exist, verse 28. That's an important verse. The entire human race is under God's sovereign rule. Now, knowing all of this, all of these things that Paul described for us about where God is and all the things he does for us and how he rules over all things. And if you seek him, you find him. In him we live and move and exist. What then should we do? Well, to put it simply, to follow the title of our message this morning, we need to practice his presence. In other words, to exercise the discipline of always being conscious of God's presence with us at all times and in every place, in every situation. And so what I want to do for you this morning and the rest of our time here is to leave you with three actions that will help us practice God's presence in our lives. I use the term actions. I thought about using the word three disciplines, but that sounds kind of tough, so we'll make it easier. We'll call them actions. Three things that we must do to practice God's presence. Number one is always thank God for his presence. Always thank him for his presence. Even when you don't sense he is there, thank him for it, and you'll be probably in a better place to realize that he is. Now, we have a couple of verses that talk to us about thankfulness. For one, 1 Thessalonians 5:18 tells us, in everything, give thanks, for this is God's will for you in Christ Jesus. Now, we've always made the emphasis here, as we rightfully should. It doesn't say you have to thank God for everything. You don't have to say, oh, thank you, Lord, that my husband has cancer. Thank you that my kid's getting a divorce. No, those aren't good things. We're not thankful for those. But the command is to give thanks in everything. Why? Well, because of what Psalm 100 says, verses 4 and 5, just a segment of those two verses, we're told to give thanks to him, bless his name, for the Lord is good. Now, if he was bad or not always good, then we might have reason to be a little bit upset with him. Especially when those bad things come our way. Then we might say, oh, this is the time when God is not being very good to me right now. But he's always good in everything he does, in everything he allows. And so thankfulness, I would say, is the key that opens the door to the awareness of God's presence, as well as the awareness of his involvement in your life, as well as everything else in the world. From everything that's going on in Syria and Egypt and Afghanistan and everywhere else in the world and even in our own country, he's involved. He's present. We can thank him for that. But it's so easy to get swallowed up by problems and irritations, isn't it? Big and small. Sometimes it's the little irritations that get to us more than the big stuff. The big stuff kind of tends to drive us to God. It's the little stuff that really just tears us apart sometimes. Things we experience throughout the day that kill your joy or strip us of our contentment. Amazing what a loss of a ball game can do to us, you know? Or just somebody cuts you off in traffic. How people can go from just being irritated to in a rage. So we're left through these experiences with anxiety, with irritability, or just outright rage. But a thankful heart arouses our awareness of the many blessings that we're given throughout the day. It's that spirit of thankfulness that cushions the impact of trials and irritations when they come. So practice God's presence by first practicing thankfulness in everything. And that will help you be aware that God is involved in this. Secondly, always be looking for his presence. always be looking for it. Now, in verse 27 of our text, Paul, well, he uses terms like seek him, find him. He is not far from each of us. Now, he's telling this to people who didn't know God, but we're reading it now as people who do know him. At least I trust you do know him. And we don't have to confine these words about seeking him and finding him to just lost people who need Christ. I think we can plug this concept into our daily lives as God's people who already know him. I want to read for you, if you'll just listen to these words that were spoken by the prophet Jeremiah, but they were actually the words of God given to his people Israel concerning their impending captivity by the Babylonians. They were about to move into a really bad experience that would last for a really long time. But God said this to them through Jeremiah the prophet, chapter 29, verses 11 through 14. For I know the plans that I have for you, declares the Lord. Plans for your welfare and not for calamity, to give you a future and a hope. Then, this is meaning after you've gone through this experience, then you will call upon me and come and pray to me and I will listen to you. You will seek me and find me when you search for me with all your heart. I will be found by you, declares the Lord. Now, that was obviously a specific piece of information for a specific people at a specific time. But the application can also be connected to our lives because we are people of God through Christ. And God does have plans for us. And the same promise is, in him, he has plans for our hope, not for our calamity. And if we call upon him, he listens and he responds and we'll find him because he's always there. So do you look for God's involvement in everything that happens in your life, every day, through every experience, big or small? Sometimes it's obvious. Just Friday. Normally we're closed on Friday. Nobody's here. And the mail carrier knows that, so they don't deliver the mail on Friday or Saturday. UPS knows that. Our driver doesn't deliver anything on Fridays or Saturdays. But all day long, or all week long, I should say, we were looking for some Sunday school material to be delivered. We needed it to get the teachers this Sunday. And every day, Wendy kept looking for it, and came the end of the day, Thursday, and it still hadn't come. So we thought, well, that's the way it goes. Well, because we know we're closed on Friday, so no delivery is going to be made till Monday now. But this past Friday, I had to come down to church to do some work for a little while. And as I was coming to church, I had to take kind of a different route because I had another stop, and I came up Constitution Boulevard, and there was this slowpoke that was this, well, I won't tell you the gender or the age bracket or anything like that. But she was, oh, I'm sorry. I'm sure it was full bore to her, but to me, it was a turtle's pace. So I thought, I get up to that stoplight, I'm going to get in the inside lane because she'll take her time going around there, and I'll just take this turn, jump over into the right lane, and I can get to Oakland Drive. So I make the turn, and there's a slowpoke ahead of me there. So now I'm behind two slowpokes, you know, and I'm thinking, people, the speed limit's 35, not 20, you know. But both of these individuals had the same communication, I guess, from above and felt that this must be a parade, you know. So I'm thinking, I got to get up to this stoplight, and I could see the arrow's green, folks. If we get up there, we can make it. But then I realized isn't going to happen. And so I need to get over in that right lane. And there was another person beside me, so I couldn't even get over there. And I'm watching my mirror. So I had to slow down to like 15 so I could get over in that lane and make the turn. And obviously we missed the green arrow, so we had to sit there for a little while and go through the cycle before we could turn. I got to the church finally, and I wasn't upset. You know, I've learned to just be patient and, okay, I know, Beth, not always. Don't be making those faces. Just all eyes up here. Okay. Most of the time now, I can just, if I'm not in a hurry or I got to be someplace, you know, if this isn't just normal life, then I can just say, okay, this is the way it's going to be. So as I pulled into the church parking lot and I came down the hill, the UPS truck came down behind me. And she had the box of Sunday school material. It just happened, the timing was perfect, that she happened to be at this spot on Oakland Drive when she saw me pull in. And so she wheeled on in behind me. My first thought was, you know, God put that slowpoke and that other slowpoke in front of me because he said, just slow it down, Johnson. I want to get that package to the church. Now, had I been able to go my normal speed, would have missed it. The UPS driver would have never come. But that's the way it is. So do you look for God's presence and his involvement in your life? Probably taking place a lot more than we think it is. Now, we may not always immediately recognize his presence, or we may not always know right away what his involvement or what his purpose is in everything. Sometimes we'll find out immediately, other times not. But we can trust that whatever it is, however it turns out, his hand is on it and in it. We can trust those great words spoken through Isaiah the prophet, in quietness and trust is your strength. So hard just to be quiet, just to be still and know that he's God, to trust him quietly, but that's what we need to do. So always thank God for his presence. Always be looking for his presence. And third, always communicate with God. Always be in communication with him. Just conversation. Because communion with God makes this journey of ours so much easier and more enjoyable. You imagine if you took a drive from here to California with a friend. And you both hop in the Chevy or the Ford, whatever you want. And from the time you leave your driveway till the time you arrive at your destination in California, your friend, your passenger, never speaks a word to you unless they're hungry and want to stop to eat or they want to stop at a rest area. Other than that, it's silence. Rather awkward trip, I would say. But that's the way many people treat God. They move through this journey of life. They don't communicate with him unless they need something. Or they need an answer for something. But if we go back to our text here in Acts 17, verse 28, we're reminded that in him we live and move and exist. Now, we got a pretty good idea about live and exist. But I want to focus on that word move. In him we move. Now, I could give you a Greek word for that, but that wouldn't mean anything to you. I'll just say that the word in the Greek here for move means to move from one place to another. That wasn't profound, I know, but that's the meaning of the word. We're moving from one place to another place. So the implication is that of what I call progressive development. Progressive development. That is, moving in the sense of changing, of moving, progressing. The same word is used in Hebrews 6, verse 1, where the writer says, let us move on to mature teaching. Let us progress to more mature teaching, to deeper matters in the Scriptures. Now, we know when God created Adam, there was this special relationship that they enjoyed together. That is, before Adam disobeyed God and messed it all up for us. But we also know that Jesus Christ came and restored all that Adam lost. So that now, through Christ's redemption, through His shed blood, through His taking the penalty of our sins on the cross, we now can enjoy communion with God, much like Adam did. We can communicate with Him in conversation. Not only that, we can change for the better. We can progress in our development, progress towards spiritual maturity. We can develop in our relationship with God and move from a shallowness to a deeper, more intimate relationship with Him, all because of the redemption of Christ. What He accomplished for us. However, we also have the choice to disregard that privilege. We can choose to opt out, if I could use that word. Don't take that too theologically. But we can choose to opt out of this privilege and live and move and exist on our own by following our own wisdom, our own human wisdom, or our own fleshly emotion. When you think about it, how many choices and how much of our attitudes are the product of our fleshly emotion? I do this because I feel this is something I should do. Or this is something that will make me feel better. Or I'm just moved by emotion to respond in this way. We probably do that more than we admit, but following your own human wisdom and your own emotion can sometimes lead you down the wrong path. Now, I will add that most of the time we do this unintentionally. We don't necessarily always set out to disregard God. Sometimes we do. When we do that, we get in trouble. But we do it unintentionally most of the time, I think, because we're just in a habit of taking charge of our own circumstances. We're in a habit of disengaging God until we need Him. We think we can handle this. This is small stuff. I don't need to bother God with this, or He's not really interested in this thing. So I can manage this. But that's not always the case. It's those little things and those little decisions that lead us down that wrong path. And imagine the difference it would make in our lives if every moment of every day we realize that in Him we live, we move, we exist. I think certainly we would communicate with Him much more consistently and we would be much less frustrated in life. You know, the reality of life is that we live with fears, with anxieties, with uncertainties, with trials, with problems. I know that's all negative stuff, and I didn't bring you all here just to get you all down and out. But you know, it's all negative stuff, but the truth is that's the stuff life is made of. And that's why the Bible has so much to say about these things. And how to cope with all of these issues of life. Because that's life. You can't run from it. We're going to have good days and wonderful days and happy days. But we're also going to have those tough days. But as long as we know that in Christ we live and move and exist, then I think most assuredly we can rest in the knowledge that He is near and He is in control. More than that, we can rest in promises like Psalm 46, verse 1, knowing that God is a very present help in trouble. In Psalm 16:11, that in His presence is fullness of joy. And there's no qualifier there that says in His presence in only good times is fullness of joy. No, in His presence, no matter where, no matter what, is fullness of joy. Now, we can think about and dream about something better. When we're in a bad place, we can fantasize about being somewhere else, either in that tropical island or in some other workplace or anything else. Maybe that helps us cope, but I was just reading in a devotional book this week this statement: fantasizing about future happiness is unrealistic. It really is. Now, I know Paul talked about looking ahead to the glory that is to be revealed to us and how that's no comparison to what we're dealing with now, but he wasn't fantasizing about something. He was stating a fact. But we do more fantasizing about how better life is going to be if we were someplace else or doing something else. And maybe it would be, but the fact is, when we fantasize about future happiness, it does nothing to help us with the present circumstance. That's still there. And so what we need to do instead is to live in the present. But as we live in the present, we do so while we thank God, while we look for Him, and while we communicate with Him. And then we can trust our moments to let Him fill them with His joy. Corrie ten Boom, what a wonderful godly woman she was, and the testimony that she left. And there are so many statements and quotes that are given, things that she said. Maybe we'll have the opportunity in heaven someday to sit down and spend some time with her one-on-one. I don't know what it's going to be like. But when you think about this monument to an unknown God, these poor people that the Apostle Paul was encountering there in Athens, that's the situation they were in. But we know better. Those of us who are in Christ know God. We have His Word that reveals everything about Him that we need to know. Corrie ten Boom said something that I think is encouraging for us. Never be afraid to trust an unknown future to a known God. Every one of us here in this room doesn't know what tomorrow will bring. But we know God. And if we know Him, we can trust Him. Do you believe what God said about His power and about His presence? Then trust Him in it. Father, thank You for this time.